Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 26.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins. It's a current of love, a chorus of pain rising up from.
This week we have conversations with Lansing Lugnuts pitcher Jeremy Gavariski and hitting coach Ken Huckabee. Sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2014 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook. Written by Jay Blue, Charlie Caskey, and Jared McDonald, the handbook is available as an ebook now at smashwords.com for only $7.99 US. We do anticipate availability soon on iTunes, Amazon, and other online retailers, but for now, it's a Smashwords exclusive. You'll get all of what you need to follow the Toronto Blue Jays minor league system and the players. We've got team profiles with ticket information, media information, as well as team histories and driving directions. We've also got player profiles of over 250 players in the Toronto Blue Jays system. It's jam-packed with Blue Jays minor league goodness. And now on to the conversations. First, we talked to Lugnuts starter Jeremy Gavariski, a 2011 second rounder who has given the Lugnuts a chance to win every time he takes the rubber. Welcome back to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'm here with Jeremy Gavariski, starting pitcher for the Lansing Lugnuts. Welcome to the podcast, Jeremy.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's definitely nice to be here today. We've got a sunny day here for Star Wars Day in Lansing. Are you looking forward to seeing some of the fans dressed up in costume?
Yeah, I'm actually, my dad liked Star Wars whenever I was little, so I kind of grew onto it. I like Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, that kind of stuff. So I'm actually kind of excited today.
And are you excited with the news that the new film is being made, that episode 7, I believe it is?
Oh, yeah. Very excited. I'll definitely go see it.
So now that we've discussed, you know, Star Wars, let's talk about some baseball. We'll talk about your start last night. Last night, I think you went 6 1/3 innings, very strong innings. You looked very much in command. What can you tell us about the start?
I felt good going into the start. Commanded my fastball really well, started mixing speeds. My changeup and slider were really working for me last night. Defense playing good behind me. And I just got guys taking lazy swings at the balls. And I got through it. I got in trouble 2 innings. The last thing kind of got away from me. Ended it good, though. Got a pop out. Only gave up 1 run. So I think it was a good start.
Now, when you're out there and, you know, you were out there and I believe there was one runner on. And I believe he was on second, or he may have gone to third on the flyout, and you know, when you've got the runners on and the manager comes out and you see him coming out, and he's going to go to in yesterday's case it was Scott Silverstein, who was warming up in the bullpen. You know, what's going through your head at that moment?
In that moment yesterday, I was just thinking of recalling on how the game went so far. I thought I threw a really good game. I know I only went 6 1/3. I reached my pitch limit, so that's the reason. I trusted the bullpen, and once I saw it was Scott, I was like, all right. I got on the bench, cheered on Scott, hoping he can get through that inning and leave that last runner on so we still have a lead. And pretty much in those kind of moments, I mean, I just tipped my hat to myself, saying good job to George and calling a good game, and just leaving it up to the bullpen.
And, of course, the bullpen did get it done. Scott stranded those runners. I think he came in to pinch another inning. And then Griffin Murphy came in with the save. So how encouraging is it to see, you know, some really solid work behind you in the bullpen?
That's a plus. Whenever our bullpen guys can come in and do that, and we can get that trust as starters for the bullpen guys, knowing we come out of the game 6th, 7th inning or something like that, we know they can close it out, that's always a good feeling. We know we got them in the we'll give them a break for the first couple of innings, and they can get in there and get their work in, and we know they're going to do well.
Now, last year you had a really strong year in Vancouver with the Canadiens, the Northwest champion Vancouver Canadiens. What are the differences between what you're doing this year and what you were doing last year?
I would probably say commanding the fastball a little better. I got a little more command on my changeup. I'm able to throw it outside to righties, inside to lefties. I can go work with both sides of the plate. The sliders a lot sharper, getting over the top of the ball. It's getting a lot better break. So pretty much I'm just changing my speeds a little better. Last year was just working on getting that command in there and sided. We did a good job in our sides getting that. And over the end of the – towards the end of the year, it got even better. This year, yeah, it's probably just command and just changing up speeds. Keep the hitters honest. Keep them guessing up there. And that's probably the main thing.
Now, you mentioned that Vince Horsman has been getting you to get on top of the ball a little bit more. And, you know, what kind of a difference is that making for you, especially in terms of velocity?
A lot. I mean, like you said, my start in April was sitting like 82 to 85. And after we started working on getting over the top of the ball, now it's 86 to 89 like it was last night. It's a lot better feel. My legs feel like they're doing most of the work. My arm just for the ride. Commanding the fastball a lot better. It's down in the zone for the most part, and I got more of a tilt angle than a flat angle, so it's a lot harder for the hitters to hit.
Another thing I noticed last night was that, you know, your slider has more, I guess, vertical movement going downwards than it does east-west, I think, the way some pitchers throw it. Is that also due to being able to stay on top of the ball a little better?
Yeah, it is, and I used to throw more of a curveball, more of a 12-6 curveball coming out of high school, and over the year, it's turned more into like a slurve, so we started to call it a slider, so it has more depth, and getting over the top of the ball definitely gives you that extra advantage of doing that, and when you stay on top of the ball, it looks like it's fastball, and then it breaks, and that's always a good thing. Having it vertical more than horizontal is always a good thing.
Now, you know, I wouldn't be doing my job as a Canadian baseball writer without asking you about Vancouver and what it's like to play there. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what that experience is like?
It's amazing. We get sellouts pretty much every night. I think it's like 5,200 fans, something like that. It's a great ballpark, great atmosphere, great city. People are behind you 100%. And we had a great year last year. We backed our way into the playoffs, and we ended up coming out and winning it. And it was a blast. Vancouver was a lot of fun.
Now, last night, you're facing an interesting team in the West Michigan Whitecaps last night. They have a player who probably has a brother who's a little bit better known in Ben Verlander, the younger brother of the Tigers, Justin Verlander. And a little birdie told me last night that Justin Verlander was one of the pitchers that you really idolized growing up. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. I'm a big fan of Justin Verlander. I like the way he plays the game. He plays it the right way. He's got great stuff, evidently. I mean, he's one of the best pitchers in major leagues. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Justin Verlander.
I've also heard that lately you're sort of looking a little bit more at someone like Cliff Lee and seeing what he does. You know, what do you see in Cliff Lee that you're trying to emulate?
His command. I've noticed. I watched him in spring training when he pitched against the Blue Jays. We went to a game after practice one day. And his command is phenomenal. He's got a lot of experience in the big leagues. I don't know, he's got great stuff. He's got a great changeup, great fastball. He's got a great slider. And I just like watching. Before games, I kind of watch videos and kind of like imitate them kind of whenever I'm throwing. I'm just thinking the way they're throwing. I'm watching them throw to hitters, what pitches they're throwing. And I kind of take that into my game. I know it might sound... I don't know, but it, I don't know. Yeah, I like Cliff Lee. I like Justin Verlander. I like watching Roy Oswalt, but back when I was young. I just like watching big leaguers throw that are good.
Well, you definitely can't get much better people to try to emulate as you make your way towards the big leagues. I want to thank Jeremy Gabariski, starter for the Lansing Lugnuts, for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
That was Lansing Lugnuts righty Jeremy Gabariski. Next, we have my interview with Ken Huckabee, who is currently the hitting coach for the Lugnuts. Huckabee is a former big league catcher who spent parts of three seasons with the Blue Jays and has moved up with a lot of the Lugnuts hitters from his post doing the same job with the Bluefield Blue Jays last year. Welcome back to the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'm here in Lansing, Michigan with Ken Huckabee. Ken is the batting coach for the Lansing Lugnuts. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you for having me.
So the first thing I want to ask you is you've been working with some of these guys for, this is probably the second year since they were in Bluefield last year. What kind of approach do you take when you're working with players that you've already got that rapport with, already got that experience with?
The approach we take is just to further along the process and what they're doing and you know, last year we taught them things at the beginner level of how to, you know, approach their at-bats, how to get their routines going every day. And now to take them to full season, and now all of a sudden they're starting to realize that this game is just not 2.5 months long like it was last year in short season, and that we do have 5 months, and to teach them how to pace themselves to get through a long season.
Would you say that there's more of what you're doing that's mechanical in A-ball than there was in rookie ball, or the other way around, or is there more that you're working on in terms of their approach?
It's most of what we do here is approach. We really try and teach every one of these young guys to that you have to be on time to hit the fastball, and we preach it, and we work on it. Now all the drills we do is just for them to be ready to hit when it's time to hit, and mechanics with most of these guys, they can hit the ball, they know how to swing the bats, especially when they get to this level. So we just try and teach them how to, you know, that each pitcher is different. We had to change our timing, and it's a maturity process.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned timing, because I've seen a lot of these guys over a couple of years, and something that I've noticed, especially with Mitch Ney, is last night he was facing a pitcher who wasn't throwing particularly hard at the beginning of the game, mm-hmm. and he was out in front of the ball, and I've actually seen him do that in his first at-bats a couple of times. Is there any sort of timing mechanism that you think, especially with Mitch, that, you know, for guys who maybe he gets geared up a little bit more for the heat, mm-hmm. and has a little bit of trouble slowing it down, especially the first time he sees a guy?
Yeah, it really is. He comes in the game, and Mitch is a high-intensity, very, very good baseball player, and he comes in a little amped up for that first at-bat, and if the pitcher's throwing hard, he's usually on it. If it's not, sometimes he'll make an adjustment as the first at-bat goes on if he's in there long enough. But as you saw last night, when his second, third, and fourth bats have come around, we've had a chance to talk between innings about what the pitcher's doing to him, and he makes really good in-game adjustments.
Now, speaking of guys who throw hard, just a few days ago you saw Aroldis Chapman for the Cincinnati Reds on a rehab assignment in Dayton. What were you telling the guys before the game? I guess only three of them ended up facing him. But what did you tell them anything special about facing someone like that?
No, not really. I mean, it's a good treat for the guys to face and see what a major league, top major league closer throws like. And I just told them to get ready early. You can't match power with power. You just got to get it back and get the barrel to the ball. And he's providing all the power. And I just told him to have fun with it. You know, it was only for one inning. We all knew it. And that's one of those things. It's almost just like a little treat that they get. And you just have fun with it. If you strike out, so what? He's supposed to strike you out. If you get a hit, you can put it in your books.
Now, speaking of heat, also, you know, there was a game early in April that I was here for, and I saw DJ Davis take a 97-mile-an-hour fastball off the wall in center field. Probably goes out in some other parks. Is that sort of his forte with Davis, is hitting that fastball?
It is, and DJ also very young player, still learning the ropes of the game, and yeah, that is. I mean, he's got a lot of power in his slim body, and obviously we all know about his speed, and the process with DJ is just getting him to learn how to hit the fastball and having him learn his body and learn. I mean, like I said, he's very young. If you think back to what most of us were doing at 19 years old, we probably weren't doing things nearly as good as this young man is.
Well, I know I wasn't, but I mean, obviously, all of these players are very young. I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing about the Lansing team this year, is that most of the players here are very young for the league relative to the average age. Is there an especially more challenging? Is there a way that you're sort of teaching them that might be a little bit more challenging for a younger player than maybe for some of the older players that might come through?
No, not really, because they need to learn. And the kids we have here are kids that, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays want to move. They want to get through their system. We have a lot of talented players here. And so we're trying to teach them what it takes to move through the system and ultimately get to the big leagues. So we're not teaching them anything different than what we would teach the older guys at all. I look at it as let's be young and win. And then that way it makes it look even better. You guys will accomplish your goals a little quicker.
So I want to ask you, this is kind of a little game. I'm going to name a player, and I just want you to let me know what's the first thing comes to your mind about them when you think about them. The first one I'll start with is Derek Lovelace.
Ooh, lovey. First thing that comes to my live, focused. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. He's a very focused young man.
Matt Dean.
Swagger. He's got a little swagger to him and a confidence to him that you can't teach.
Doel Lugo.
Ooh. Puppy. The young puppy, still learning how to walk. Very talented also, and just teaching him the game, you know, one step at a time.
Somebody who's actually been really, really good this year is Jorge Saiz, and you've had him for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. What do you think of when you think about Jorge?
I think about a kid that wants to learn, who's as being an ex-catcher, his focus on his craft is awesome to talk to. He's always asking the right questions, and he's always trying to apply those questions that he asks, the answers to him in the game, and his hitting has just gotten better and better.
And that was actually sort of the next question I was going to ask you is, being a former major league catcher, do you do any work with the catchers here about their defensive game?
I do. Sal Fasano is our catching coordinator, and he has the system in place, and it's our jobs to implement his system. So I do monitor the catchers here. I do talk to them, and along with Vince Horstman, our pitching coach, we talk about, you know, the mental part of calling the game, and I'm more in the physical part of making sure that they're in the right positions to do their blocking, their receiving, and their throwing. So, yeah, I do monitor them while they're here.
Now, someone who's, I guess, gotten probably the most press of all the catchers on this team is Santiago Nesi, and this is, I guess, your first year working with him as the team's hitting coach. Mm-hmm. As well, he's also a catcher. And is there anything that you see from him this year that, because obviously he's off to a much better start this year than he was last year, is there anything that you're seeing this year that you think he's really building upon and really able to build upon?
Yeah, I think Santiago is finally starting to mature mentally. He's always had the skill set physically, and he's starting to take his game to a mental game, which as a catcher is paramount for what we do. And as far as his hitting goes, he's off to a good start, and it's the same thing as I said earlier, is he's just tweaked his approach. And a lot of these young kids, they think home runs is the way to the game. And at this age level, we're trying to teach these kids how to be hitters, especially the kids that have power, because we always know the power is going to be there. But if we teach them how to hit, now all of a sudden teams have a little bit of a difficulty pitching to them. So,
would you say that you've taken that approach with someone like Mitch Ney, who I know, and I've talked to other people about this, and I've seen it myself, in that he's not always looking to hit the ball out of the park. He's looking for what he needs to do.
Yes, and that's where we started with Mitch last year in extended spring training. We carried it through Bluefield. We know he has power. We know he has opposite field power. So we're trying to teach him to take his knocks, because, you know, as he pushes through the system, pitchers are going to pitch around him, and he needs to learn how to take his knocks. And then when pitchers make a mistake, make him pay. And right now he's still in the process of learning how to take his knocks.
And another guy I mentioned earlier, Doel Lugo, I saw him in Bluefield last year, and I know he's got tremendous raw power, but he's also maybe needs to work on his pitch selection a little bit more. He doesn't take a lot of walks. He doesn't strike out much because he's got such great hand-eye coordination. But is that something you're deliberately working on with Lugo?
Yeah, with Thal, like I said, he's learning how to hit. And the thing about Lugo is he's such a good instinctual player that if, especially him being so young, it's hard to make him overthink things because he's so instinctual. If you make him think, then the instincts are a tick behind and he's a tick slow. So with Lugo, it's more about making sure he's using his vision, using his hands, and maximizing those two things so that he does to get better pitches.
Two more questions. I know LB Dantzler has just joined the team. From what I've been able to see from him, he's got a very mature approach at the plate. Are you sort of taking someone like him, who's a four-year college player, who's a little bit older, and sort of using him as an example in terms of someone who's a little bit more patient, a little bit more willing to work for his pitch?
No, not really, because every player is different. I haven't had a lot of chances to see LB yet. He's been here for six games or five games. So I just kind of sit back and observe when a new player comes in that I don't know, because I can't correct what I don't know. And so I got to watch when he's doing good. And I've been extremely impressed with his approach. And I do hope that, you know, that's part of the stuff we talk about with these players is watch your teammates. And hopefully the teammates are watching and they learn a little bit from his approach. But he does have a very mature approach.
And one last question. Who on this team is somebody that, you know, maybe we haven't mentioned or maybe we don't know about yet, but we should be watching?
Who? You've mentioned pretty much the whole team. I mean, we haven't really talked too much about Matt Dean. Very, very good hitter at the plate, corner guy. But I know he's gotten a lot of attention from his last year winning the batting title in Bluefield, so he's not... I don't think he's an under-the-radar guy, but another very talented player here.
Okay, and since you didn't mention him, I thought I'd mention one of the hottest guys on the team is Justin Atkinson.
Yes.
And, you know, for our listeners in Canada, they always like to hear the Canadian boy done good story. So what can you tell us about Justin?
Justin also took his game to another level this year. He came in with a little bit more open mind. We changed some things in his stance. We changed some things in his hands and changed his approach. And he's taken to it, and he's seeing the success that comes with not trying to just be a power guy and accepting the fact that this is a game of failure. And sometimes we fail, and it's okay. And we come back, and we get another shot at it. That's the beauty of the game, is you always get another chance. And he's blossomed this year and just in his approach.
Well, great. I want to thank you very much. That's Ken Huckabee, the batting coach for the Lansing Lugnuts in 2014. And that's all for episode number 26 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Jeremy Gabariski and Ken Huckabee of the Lansing Lugnuts. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week and go Jays go!